We said yes to South Carolina, not just being Republican, but becoming conservative.
Career politicians in Sacramento and Washington, D.C., be warned, because you now face your worst nightmare.
The people of California have had enough. In fact, I think they can hear you all the way to Washington, D.C.
Haley Whitman Fiorina, as big winners and survivors from yesterday's primaries are named Blanche, Carly, Meg, Nikki, and Sharon. Maybe the weak showing of the Tea Party isn't the only trend worth talking about, eh? We will break down the results from New Jersey, California, and around the country coming up. But first, in the supposed year of the anti-incumbent, familiarity may be still a good thing in Harlem, Washington Heights, and on the Upper West Side. That's Congressman Charles Rangel's district, where the 20-term Democrat is going for 21, despite a passel of ethics questions. He's got at least three Democratic primary challengers, and many people thought the 79-year-old icon might just hang it up this year after having to resign his chairmanship of the Ways and Means Committee. But Congressman Charles Rangel announced his reelection bid this past weekend, and he joins us now. Congressman Rangel, thanks as always for coming on. Welcome back to WNYC. Oh, we don't have him? Okay. We have a line connected to his office, and we are expecting Congressman Rangel momentarily. Well, let's do this. Since you never know with a member of Congress just how long this might take, the guys can give me an update. Is he there? Okay. Congressman Rangel, thanks for coming on. Welcome back to WNYC.
It's always great to be with you, Brian.
First, we just played some clips of primary winners from yesterday. Do you think there's any lesson for Democrats or Republican incumbents or for progressives or Tea Party members challenging from the wings from yesterday's various results around the country?
I don't, but I don't interfere with the pundits and political experts that always are looking for trends. Take my word for it, that no matter what the general public feels, there is a relationship between them and the individual member of Congress. It doesn't mean that they can escape the anger and the frustration that people generally are feeling, Republicans and Democrats. But a lot of people feel that their members on their side fighting against the things that the nation is concerned about, loss of jobs, loss of their fiscal security, lack of health care, the oil spill, the loss of money on the market. There's enough to make Americans angry. The only question that you're trying to ask me is that, do I see an impact on this in these elections? And I can't answer that. No.
All right.
Every district and every member has a different type of political problem.
So let's talk about your district and the member known as Charles Rangel. You know, I usually love to talk policy with you, Congressman, but today we have to talk mostly politics and mostly the politics of being Charles Rangel in 2010. Why do you think you deserve reelection?
Wow. Hey.
Open mic.
Because I think that I'm the best at what I do, and I can't possibly think of an alternative person that could do as well or better than me. It may sound corny, but I really think I believe it, that I love the district that I was born and raised in, and I love the city, the Congress, and my country, that I really, truly believe if someone could come and say, you know, Rangel, you've done good work, but I think someone can do better. Well, during this fiscal crisis and the joblessness and the loss of hope with so many people, I really, truly believe, Brian, that I would say, hey, I'm going to step aside because I care too much about my constituents to allow ego and longevity and seniority to be the only reasons why I'm asking to be reelected.
So what's the job over the next 2 years? What is it that you're saying you're going to be better at? Is it bringing home things for your district? Is it policy differences that you might have with anybody else trying to come up behind you? What would you say?
I would say that recently, and I'm trying to find the paper, a group of people selected me as the most effective congressman in the House of Representatives in terms of legislation that has been introduced, passed, and signed into law. While my community were the beneficiary of those things, the stimulus package, the extension of unemployment compensation, the health bill, and a variety of other things, the truth of the matter is that when I reflect the needs of my community, there are needs of communities like mine all over the country. And even though I stepped aside as chairman, I'm still working with the president, the speaker. Last night I was with Larry Summers discussing where the committee had to be going next for the next 2 years. And I think continuity, well, I know continuity really helps now since I've had two very successful years in working with the speaker and working with the president of the United States, and certainly working with my committee and the Congress. So
so it's about these relationships and how they would benefit your community and, as you say, others like your district around the country.
Brian, it's not just about my relationship. It's really about the crisis that we find ourselves in. And then it's about, well, what are you going to do about it, Rangel? And for the most part, I would be helping the president in things that he believes has to be continued. One of the biggest problems that we have is making certain that we give assurances to the governors that we're not going to make their fiscal crisis worse by forcing them economically to lay off teachers and firemen and policemen. We were there earlier with the $787 billion support that we had given to them with the stimulus package. Now they're facing a similar type of problem. What's on the other side of doing this? Well, we have a deficit. We can't afford to continue just to put money out there. And so we have a lot of people in the Democratic Party that is just not going to vote for anything that's going to increase the deficit. And we have Republicans whose entire solution to any problem we face as a country is just saying no. If we don't deal with the crisis in terms of government, if we don't allow these people to remain and continue the services that they provide, not only would our constituent lose the service, but small businessmen would lose the ability for these people to consume and to buy goods and services, which, of course, is a vicious circle, because if you're not buying this, the owner's not selling, and then he doesn't need as much personnel or salespeople. They're fired, and they join the unemployment. And so making certain that that doesn't happen, making certain that we continue to have a workforce in local government and the state is a must.
Congressman Charles Rangel, my guest on WNYC. And I have to ask you about some of these ethics questions and their pertinence to your reelection campaign. The House Ethics Committee has admonished you for violating gift rules by allowing corporate sponsorships of trips to the Caribbean in 2007 and 2008 is one of the things you've blamed your staff. But from what I've read, the corporate signage was all over these locations where the meetings were, and it was really impossible, from what I've read, not to be aware of who was paying for things. Did you not see those sponsor signs?
I don't think you can find anything, Brian, to indicate that I blame staff. If you read the report, you would find that they had said that there is no reason to believe that Congressman Rangel knew that corporate funds were involved in the payment of that trip to wherever it was in the Caribbean. And then it went further and said, and there is no evidence that a further investigation of this would allow us to reach any conclusion at all. We're talking about a one-day trip. The so-called admonishment, you should know, that there's no such thing in the code. I mean, either you can censure, you can reprimand, or you can expel a member, but you don't admonish a member. But they said, not that a staffer knew, but a staffer should have got a signal that there could be corporate involvement and have followed through, and that this failure to follow through is imputed, which is something I've been a lawyer forever, and nobody can find out how you impute proposed knowledge from the employee to me.
If you're saying you didn't blame your staff, somebody had to pay the bills or sign a check or whatever for you to go there, right?
No. Well, the foundation would. They're not on my staff.
A foundation.
I've
and what
going
about
with
the...
this foundation for years. And you might know that six members of Congress went, and all of this was approved, Brian, ahead of time by the committee. Not just the committee staff, but I received a letter from the committee authorizing the trip.
And this question of the signs at
the
meeting,
that
because it keeps coming up in the trip, what would those signs have signaled to you?
Not a thing at all. I was invited to go give a speech, not to go on the beach. I got there late one day, spoke the next day, and I was going back home. So if you're talking about a big convention hall that set signs up, if my life depended on it, I couldn't tell you what one of those signs said. And people were concerned about my arrival. I had said I wasn't going. They insisted. They needed me. People were expecting me. They wanted me to talk about the Caribbean Basin Trade Initiative, that they had depended on it. I was in the program. And so I was hustled in a very cordial way, of course, and received applause, said hello to all of my friends. The last thing in the world I was doing was looking at signs that could or could not have been in the hall.
All right.
And it had nothing to do with me going there. You can't see the signs until you are there. And the fact is that the trip had been approved. What could I have done if I saw the sign and it said, welcome to a community fest, that don't give your speech and go back home? No.
Another one, since there are a number of these now that are prominent issues, you also acknowledge, if I understand correctly, that you failed to report to the IRS $70,000 in rental income from a property you own in the Dominican Republic in 1 year, and have hired a financial forensics expert to determine how much you owe in back taxes on that for past years. Is that accurate?
Where did you find that accusation?
I think I found... I can't...
The fact is, you really don't know.
Somewhere
the point that I'm making is...
In the press, I can't cite the
reference. I know. Well, I just asked the question rhetorically to make a point. Since I've become chairman of this committee, a very well-known conservative group has publicly made it clear that they were raising money in order to start a campaign to get rid of Charlie Rangel. I think if you look at roll call and talk with some of the reporters or review, just Google up, you will see that while I was number one, I have now been replaced by Nancy Pelosi as being the person that they plant the stories in. They talk with reporters and they give the names of the people in the papers that they talk with. As relates to the allegations that every day, every week, were just piling on campaign headquarters, rentals that were not reported and whatnot, what I did was what I think every honest and decent member of Congress would do, is turn this over to the Ethics Committee, ask them to investigate the credibility of the allegations and to report back to the Congress. Now, this was 18 months ago, and I am now running for re-election. So I ask you and others, it just seems to me that I should not have to campaign against newspaper accusations. I should campaign based on what reports we get from the Ethics Committee. I don't have any idea what's taken them so long or what they're going to say. But what they say is legitimate. But I don't think in the height of a campaign that I can answer your questions while they are deliberating it. And I'm not one of those guys, this is my lawyer told me not to talk to you. I'm just one of those guys that said that whatever you may or may not have read in a newspaper, you don't even know where the hell you got it, I would like to believe that some credibility should be given to the Ethics Committee.
Well, did you?
Or the fact that I'm the number one lawmaker in terms of the report that I've just read, which I think deserves some consideration.
Well, did you fail to report $70,000 in rental income to the IRS?
I try to make it clear in talking with you that whatever accusations have been made as to what I did or did not do have been public accusations that have not been based on anything that you know of except what some of your colleagues have said. So that, I don't know how to say it any other way, Brian, but I'm not discussing this case until they report to the House of Representatives. So you can ask the question a half a dozen different ways, but I think we will get into a debate. And I don't need a lawyer to tell me that if people are accusing you of things, you don't debate it publicly. You find out what All are right. the charges. And All you right. don't know one charge that anybody has made against me or any accusation that is made against me by any law support organization. All you know is that you think you read it in some newspaper. Right. I'm not being critical.
Well, it's been in the, I mean, and we're rechecking our sources right now. It's been in the Daily News. It's been on NPR. It's not like it's just
I don't think that's fair, Brian. You know, if someone says they saw it in the Daily News and the Post picked it up and the Times reports what they have, well, what the hell? Right. I'm running for re-election, and I'm running on my record, and I would be more than pleased to talk about that. But
there are several more. I'm going to ask you one more, and then we'll go back to policy. But here in New York, you have four rent-stabilized apartments, which is being investigated as a possible illegal gift from the landlord to other residents in your district who can't find stabilized apartments. How should they think about you holding on to four of them until you were outed by the press?
I think that they should take my word for it, that that accusation is not true. And I think we ought to move on.
What is true in that case?
I am not going to be interrogated by you about where I personally live and what. I'm just saying that other than the story in the newspaper, there's not one thing to support it. And I've lived in the same place for 20 years. And so if I say it's not true, no one has come to verify the accusation that I have four apartments that are rent stabilized.
Are you saying that's not accurate?
I said that, but I also said that I'm not going to be cross-examined by you on that. I want to talk about why I'm running for re-election and not why you insist on talking to other reporters and reading things that you really don't know what paper it was or what basis it is. So if I said it once, I said it a million times, that all of the allegations, even those that you may make up during this discussion, I refer to the Ethics Committee because they are Republican, they are Democrat, they are equally on the committee, and I think I'll get a fair shake from them when right. they decide to report.
So here's a policy question that I got from you quoted in the Daily News this weekend, saying basically that you're critical of President Obama for pursuing the same oil-based agenda in Iraq as Bush and Cheney. How accurate did they get that?
The headline said that. I don't think the story said that at all.
What did you say?
During an hour-long interview, I told them how fortunate we were in this country and how fortunate I was as a member of Congress to have such a leader as Barack Obama. And that whether we were talking about the economy, the oil spill, the health care, the climate control, that he has provided courage and the leadership that allows me to be privileged to be carrying out his policy, and especially in support and providing the leadership on the legislation that has been necessary, and to be right there with him, with Nancy Pelosi, and with Harry Reid, and fulfilling these goals that we have as a country. When the question is always asked, do you agree with the president on everything, or do you have a problem? Or when they specifically would talk about the war, what I really said was that I challenge anybody to say that if there was no oil in Iraq, that we would have introduced troops and put our young people in harm's way.
So that goes to the original Bush policy, but then they have this quote of you that says the lack of an honest explanation is consistent with Bush and Cheney. What did you mean by that?
Well, in response to a question as to whether or not that policy has changed, I said no. And if it meant that Bush and Cheney introduced the troops because of oil, and the troops are still there, I have not seen any change in that policy as it relates to having a military presence in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Is the president not withdrawing at a sufficient pace, in your opinion?
Quite frankly, I am not prepared. I don't have the expertise to, from a military standpoint, determine what's in the best interest of the security of the United States. And I am prepared to listen to the leaders and the committees in the Congress and working with the president to determine what's in the interests of people in the United States. But the truth of the matter is, the one thing that I do say is that, can anyone challenge the fact that we have men and women dying in Iraq and in Afghanistan that would not have been there if it wasn't for our interest and dependency on oil, period.
Afghanistan now, as well? Do you support or not support the president's Afghanistan?
We are in that region because of our interest in oil. And I'm not a military person, so you're not going to get me to suggest how we get the hell out of there.
Mm-hmm.
But I am, and I'm waiting, you know, I'm not critical of anybody that says, Rangel, you're just wrong. You are wrong. We are there because this is a threat to our national security. They have weapons of mass destruction, and they are a threat to the free world. And if we don't stop them now, life as we know it on this earth and in this country, you know. But if people are just anxious to say, what has oil got to do with it? I don't know whether or not I just want to discuss it. So if we have a policy that started with Nixon or Kennedy, Kennedy, no matter who it is, and the policy still exists, it may make some news by somebody saying, well, do you see a change now between Bush and Cheney? And I guess if you're clever enough, you can have me looking like I'm critical of the president.
All right.
But what I do is ask the same question, and that is there any difference now as to why the troops were there? So bringing up Cheney's name is a lightning rod because he's not very well respected by a lot of Americans and other people. But, you know, I don't want to debate with you, but you're not saying that there's a different reason for the troops being in Iraq now than there was during Bush and Cheney. No, you're not saying that. So
One other. On the bank reform bill, the House and Senate are trying to reconcile their versions of the bill. The Senate is generally considered to have the tougher bill. Is there anything that you especially want to preserve in the House version that's different from the Senate version?
Yes, there is, especially as it relates to the derivatives in terms of control and making certain that everybody knows what these transactions are, to make certain that there is a fiduciary relationship between the banks and the people that are making these investments so that we don't have a situation where banks can bet against and these firms, these equity firms, can bet against each other. But I want to tell you, more than preserving the House position, the Senate's policies have shattered the constitutional belief that it takes a majority in the Senate to pass a bill. And why this is so readily accepted, I will never, never understand. Because they will be able to tell you on this bill, on the health bill, whether we have tax reform or no matter what we're doing, is that they need 60 votes in order to pass any bill over there, which means that as we fight and struggle alone as Democrats and holding on to votes in the House of Representatives, knowing that not one Republican has the guts or courage to believe that we're doing the right thing, then it means that at the end of the day, you can say we're going into conference. But if what we're going to hear is that you're not going to have any regulatory legislation at all if we change our position to accommodate the House, they may even go far enough to say that, hey, the House bill is much better than the Senate, but we don't have the votes for it. So what is my remedy? Am I just complaining and not suggesting? No, I'm saying that if you say you need 60 votes or you're going to have a filibuster, well, let's have the filibuster. Let those people who say that they're not going to allow 51 votes to give you a majority to stand up on the floor each and every day, each and every night, and try to convince the American people that what they're doing is constitutional, legal, and moral. But we don't have that. You can try to name a post office, and the first thing we got to hear is that we need 60 votes in the Senate. I think that is wrong, and I don't hear outrage from anybody about that.
Last thing on the political season, it has been widely reported that Republicans will run against you in district after district around the country, flashing your face as the symbol of Democratic something. Do you expect that? And do you think that that would be subtle racial coding?
I don't want to get involved in subjectively as to whether my color has anything to do with political attacks. All I know is that one of the reasons, the reason that I stepped aside was because they were trying to make me the poster boy because the money that I raised to support Democratic candidates, the fact that I was one of the three leaders in the House in putting together the health reform bill, and that somehow they've taken a breather and have not really recently thought that enough people knew Rangel to make a difference in any election. So, I like I said, every campaign requires a different approach to how the person intends to win. And if what you're suggesting is that some of the people might be using me because I supported a candidate or because I'm a Democrat, I have no clue that I would be so important that I could turn an election either way because the Republicans want to make me the anti pro-government type of guy. Having said that, I will be concentrating on my primary and making certain that I receive the broad endorsement of my constituents and move on to November. And I think the recent article in the New York Times that indicate that my constituents don't believe that I have been treated fairly, and they are very, very supportive. So I don't know what they got to do in Wee-Waw Hitchico, wherever that's located. And quite frankly, it's an interesting question, but I'm more concerned with getting the feeling of the people in my district than in other parts of the country.
So any last thing you want to say to the people in your district before you go?
Yes, to let them know that I... we all know that politics is a difficult business. I have served my constituents for close to 40 years. I would never think about doing anything that would bring any embarrassment to my family, my community, the Congress, or the country that I love. I fought and got shot for this country in 1950, and ever since then I've served either as a federal prosecutor, a state legislator, a federal congressman, a chairman of several committees, and all of this is not for me and my family. It's to improve the quality of life of the people in my district and the people in my country. And so I look forward to their continued support and a critical analysis of what I've done or haven't done as a member of Congress, and hope that people would recognize that reporters' imagination is not the reason to vote for or against somebody politically, if indeed they've done a good service.
Congressman Charles Rangel, thanks a lot.
Thank you for the opportunity, Brian. Have a great day.
You too. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We will be speaking with Congressman Rangel's opponents in that primary bid. And, of course, the race in that case is the Democratic primary in September. Presumably a Republican will not be competitive against whoever wins that nomination in September 14th. Coming up in just a minute, we will continue to talk politics. There were many primaries around the country yesterday. We'll talk about some of the interesting ones in New Jersey, California, elsewhere, and what they mean. Stay with us.